I think people have stopped trickling into the room so we can get started. This is the Enum Working Group, the Rife Enum Working Group. I'm Neil O'Reilly. I'm one of the co-chairs. My other co-chair is Carsten, who's just closing the door and making the meeting happen. And I want to begin with the preliminaries. I've squeezed the agenda onto this one screen so that we can get one eyeful of it and confirm that that's the agenda we want. Is it big enough down there in the back? Fine. Everybody's very welcome. There are, as usual, attendance sheets, so-called blue sheets, which I'm going to start passing around. If you need to make comments during the meeting, please approach one of the mics or ask for one of the hand mics and let us know who you are and what your affiliation is. We have a scribe, thank you very much, from the Rife NCC. And the other thing is, do we have a Jabberwock? Yeah, fine. So that's covered as well. Then the only thing on the first agenda item that's left then is to confirm the agenda. Have we managed to leave anything out? Or are there any other business items that we should take note of and make time for at this stage? We have these administrivia. We have the minutes and open issues from the minutes. We've a news summary from Carsten on things that are happening. We've a report from the Rife NCC on the E164.ARPA Enum delegation business, Tier Zero business. We have a report on the Etsy Enum plug test from Jim Reed. We've something about walking, essentially the analog of the host count in the plus 49 country code. And we have something more from Jim on testbed E164 testbed numbers. We've then essentially this item H at just after 3 o'clock is an item to allow us to take up any things that we want to take up over what was in the Enum track of the plenary, if there are any. And under item X, I think the closing item of the DNS working group is something that we have to mention there, and I'll ask Carsten to do that because he's working closely with Peter Koch on that. And then item Z, we aim to be ready for item Z at 3:30. And with that, I'll move on to item B on the minutes. The minutes have been posted on the mailing list. Carsten has issued a last call for comments on the minutes. And I have to put my hand up and say I didn't respond to that, but I do have an issue with one of the things in the minutes. But before that, has anybody else any minutes issues? Has everybody seen the minutes? Has anybody not seen the minutes? Well, you know where to look. Fine. Has anybody any objections to the minutes? Then there's one small matter arising from the minutes. I had some helpful comment on the use of the DNAME record from Jim during the last meeting, which was accurately minuted, but the matter arising is that both Jim and Ed Lewis approached me afterwards and said, it's not actually that bad, and it wasn't just luck that made it work for you. So it's well to have that noted for these minutes. That's to say, I think Ed put it that anything that's new enough to have NAPTA records in it surely is also new enough to have DNAME support in there as well. That was the gist of it, Ed?
I think so.
Yeah, good.
Transparency.
I'm not sure what that heckle was for, but we'll move on. Fine. Are there any? I think we don't have any yet. We don't yet have any open work items, so there's nothing to review there. We might have by the end of this meeting. So that gets us to the end of item B, and I'll hand over to Carsten for the news report. You want to use the house laptop?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah. Good afternoon, everybody. This is a very brief summary on what was going on, in particular in the IATF, since the last RAD meeting and since the last IATF in Paris in August, IATF 63. The first two topics basically cover these issues, and the third one is about DNIC's Enum Day at the end of September. What was done in the Enum Working Group at IATF? It was basically a review of the so far existing drafts. That was one internet draft from Lawrence Conroy et al. That is still active. It's on implementation issues and experiences, and that is basically just ongoing work. Then we had an Enum draft from Andy Newton from VeriSign on the IRIS Enum registry type. That is in IETF last call right now. And the last one in this batch is the IANA registration for Enum services for an Enum service voice. And that is in the status publication requested. The Enum working group at IETF 63 also looked at new drafts. One was a draft on number portability, do number portability with Enum. That has been accepted as a working group item, and I expect to have the official internet draft, the working group internet draft, anytime soon. There was also a new draft on the IANA registration for an Enum mobile service for a web page service. That sparked off quite some discussion because it was a little bit of back and forth regarding whether you actually should have negotiation of capabilities in the Enum protocol or whether that should be something that is built in the transport protocol, actually, if you would. So what I'm saying, this is, or what the conclusion, at least during the IETF working group session was, this is not yet in brackets, and the brackets are for me because that was my impression that it's not really decided to either way. It's not yet accepted as a working group item. Then the working group dealt with the three internet drafts regarding validation in general terms. At that point in time, it was still individual internet drafts, and as all three have been accepted as working group items, they are now official working group drafts. And that was basically what Bernie Hoeneisen was about to speak on Tuesday during the Enum plenary. So I guess that is like content-wise, and what this is all about is pretty much covered already anyways. Then that is another item that has been covered on Tuesday already basically by the talk of Michael Havala on carrier Enum. The working group in Paris, first of all, dealt with a paper from Steve Lind, basically carrying out the infrastructure Enum requirements. That has been accepted as a working group item and is from now on a official requirement for any kind of further drafts in terms of carrier Enum. Then we had and that was actually meant to be an almost religious war, and eventually nothing really happened at all. It was like sweet and calm. It was the two drafts being out then in terms of how to do carrier Enum. One was from Penfold and Steve Lind as well, dealing with carrier Enum issues in terms of a non-terminating NAPTA records. That was something we heard about on Tuesday as well, and the sort of competing internet draft was from Richard Stassny and Michael Havala to just branch out Enum with the little C or a carrier or whatever within by a name label in the E164.ARPA tree. At the end of the day, it was felt that the general concept of carrier Enum is indeed an Enum working group item and should be put there. Also, it was felt, or there was a, I should say, a strong preference for the Havala et al. Internet draft, with further discussion in the working group necessary. Related to that was also an internet draft in terms of what is that funny beast of non-terminal NAPTA records actually, and that was an internet draft by Lawrence Conroy. He discussed like the pros and cons and how to deal with it and what are the semantics and when you should use it and when you mustn't use it, and so that's like sort of related to that. That is not really Enum working group related, however it has like strong links, I'd say. It was the first time that the void peer buff happened. That was something like people felt like just being necessary. I come to that a little bit later. However, what happened at the very last bit of the Enum working group session was that there was a clear agreement what the Enum working group is supposed to continue to work on, and that is Enum and DNS related issues. And in these terms, the VoIP peer buff is, well, we'll just focus on non-Enum and DNS related issues, which, well, first of all, is really broad, but then you could say that it like Enum and DNS related issues could easily be brought into the VoIP peering discussion as well. And so it was basically clear that the focus of the VoIP peering idea or buff is not really clear yet. As we speak, they're trying to settle the issue and to come up with terminology and stuff, but at least Enum and DNS related issues will not be part of that. On the VoIP peer buff itself, it was very well attended. It was like, I counted like some 250 plus people. So I took it that there was a great interest, and there still is a great interest in that very matter. The goal of the VoIP peering buff basically is to, as I put it down here on the slide, is I took that from the initial agenda of the buff session, is to initiate a longer term discussion. What are the needs of VoIP peering and interconnect, and to just understand how anything like, how should I put it, how to set up peering and interconnect, although peering is not probably not the appropriate term anyways, because peering, as we know it, most likely happens on level 3 and not on level 5, which is basically VoIP as an application. So that is the long-term goal, and the second goal, the short-term goal is basically to come up just with some terminology and some first use cases. The next BOF will be held during the upcoming IETF 64 meeting in Vancouver, and I hope it's hardly readable. There is a web address for the BOF itself, and you can also subscribe to the mailing list. And that's the second or the last bullet point on that very slide. Yeah, definitely. What happened since? Just very brief. There's a new idea out from Alexander Meyerhofer on how to actually publish user information with Enum. That is basically linking a phone number together via an Enum service virtual card, linking together an Enum phone number basically with a business card, and the transportation method will be HTTP and HTTPS. There's also a draft out on eDNS 0 support for Enum, which Jim, where are you? Oh yeah. So that is basically that eDNS 0 support is a draft by Lawrence Conroy and Jim Reed. Like basically what are the requirements of eDNS 0 support, or even that there is a requirement for eDNS 0 support if you're using Enum and the entire chain of DNS resolution. Last but not least, there was a recent creation of a new area in the IETF, the so-called real-time applications and infrastructure area, and the Enum working group, amongst several others, is meant to be moved from a transport area to this newly created area. And again, I put the relevant links on the slide. Which brings me to my last agenda item, which is the Stenix Enum Day that happened on the 28th of September this year. This Enum Day officially concluded the German Enum trial phase that ran since 2002 already. And the main two parts were basically the publication of the final report, firstly, and secondly, the operational policy. They're both available in German only yet. But as DINIC, as the registry, has non-German registrars as well, I expect to have some translation of that more or less soon. The regular commercial operation, as Markus put it already on Tuesday as well, is meant to be started before the end of this year. Some figures about the trial. There was a mailing list, of course. We had about 600, or DINIC had about 600 mailing list subscribers. There was more than 100 attendees of each of the five Enum days, which this one was the last. DINIC held them basically every 6 months. 60 DINIC members out of 240 were participating in the field trial. We had some 3,600 tier 2 registrations, so delegations from 9.4.E164.ARPA downwards, which at the end of the day could be of course way more, because if you look at the open numbering plan Germany has with all sorts of PBXs around, that of course could be way more. There were all sorts of entities participating in the field trial that were software and hardware vendors, businesses, private users, any kind of service providers, and of course also the German National Regulation Authority, RECTB, just to name some. It was an interdepartmental project for real, of operations, development, software development, support, the legal department, public relations. What has been achieved? We set up the system technically as well as administratively, and its interfaces, and it was also documented, because setting up only the systems and the interfaces is only halfway, of course, as we all know. What DINIC also did was to evaluate different methods of validation, and of course the requirements are for the DNS operation to really carry out Enum on an operational basis. The registration itself is along the lines of the model for a plain normal .de domain name. We have the registry, registrar, registrant model. These are the parties involved. The only thing that's sort of really additional here is the need for the registrar to have a positive validation result on file for every Enum registration he's managing on behalf of, that should be its, not ist, customer. And again, any further information, find me or just hit the web. So the last bullet item, which brings me to my last slide. Any questions?
Any questions? No? Thank you, Carsten. And next up, at slippage of 5 minutes, is Axel Pavlik. See what you can regain, but don't feel under too much pressure. We think we have some slack.
Fine. Fine, this, yes. Good afternoon. I was asked who would give an update on what we do at the Ride NCC about Enum. I was not careful enough and said, I can do that. So that's why I'm here. I know nothing about this, really. Quick overview. The overview slide is already longer than the rest of the presentation, so on we go. And no, these are not people that are working on Enum at the Ripe NCC day in, day out. It's just various responsibilities. Andre is the head figure for the technical contact there. External political things talk to me or to Paul. And then within registration services, we have three people who are working on Enum, actually, sometimes, if there's something to work on. Okay? We have a website, as you know. We find some information on Enum on there, and the URL, which should be on here really, is www.ripe.net/enum, as you probably know already. The other side of that, and you see the color changing, that's the ripe side of it, is the working group pages, and I guess that Carsten knows lots about that and can answer any questions there. I've been asked to present some statistics. These are delegations made over the course of this year. By now you have read through them, if you didn't know. There were, there was one, objected request that is not objected anymore, so it should be on the other slide by now. But it happens from time to time that we get a negative response from the ITU folks. One statistic slide, these are the queries that we have seen with an average of about 8 per minute to delegated Tier 1 registries, and it's not other, that's the big pile, I believe that is, who is it, Germany? I don't know exactly what that is. You have to figure that out. The interesting bit is this one. We do get a pile of queries for not yet delegated registries, and well, we don't know when this is going to happen, especially for plus one. And basically, that's all from me. We have received occasional questions whether we would consider doing tier one delegations down further, and we said yes, we in principle would do that. Those wouldn't be for free certainly, and I would not be especially eager to do anything there. When those were the requests, the initial questions, and hasn't been followed up so far yet.
Fine. You certainly recovered our slippage, Axel. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Are there things that people want to find out more that Axel didn't mention? Yes, please. Can you approach the mic and tell us who you are and where you're coming from, please?
Ladislav, Emirates Telecommunication. I was just wondering about that graph you showed. Does it mean the traffic you're getting on the Enum route is like 8 requests per minute?
Yes.
This is the total traffic you're getting now.
It's relatively quiet.
Carsten. Microphone.
Just related to that very question. That covers all the E164 dot upper servers or only the primary name server that's under control of the NCC?
That's only those under our control.
Okay.
But
because I can recall an action item that, that sort of an action item, that it would be interesting to, wherever possible, collect that kind of information from all the E164
upper servers. Let me clarify what this really is, and we can certainly deliver that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
And this was the first statistics run, so obviously statistics are improvable, and we would like to do them more regularly as well.
That sounds like an action item that you're volunteering for or taking upon yourself.
Just be careful with being unclear. Are you requesting the FNCC collect statistics? Because that would be diverging from all DNS practice. It's basically if you delegate, you can collect statistics about what the authoritative name server for the TLD in this case do. But I think if it's up to the delegees to publish their statistics independently, and what the maximum one could do is to have a website that points to that, to those other sites. But I don't think we should go back to the days where the NCC was the general statistics collection agency.
That sounds like fair comment to me, but Carsten wants to answer.
So you're basically saying statistics on E164.upper would be nice, but not sort of broken down to the respective CCTLD or E164 country code.
So what Axel just showed is fine. That's basically statistics about the route the E16.ARPA servers, but the 9.4.E16.4.ARPA servers should keep their own statistics and publish their own statistics.
Oh, that sounds to me like a no-brainer. But yeah. I think what Carsten was asking for was that it would be nice to have statistics from the operator of the E16.4.ARPA route, mm-hmm. covering not just the name server that's here, but the family of name servers that serve the route. Is that what you were asking, Carsten?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, okay. I thought that was presented already.
Can you go back a little bit?
Oops, sorry. Wrong direction.
This one, right. Just to have statistics not only from the relevant CC operator primary, but from all the secondaries as well. And
that makes sense. Yeah.
Figures out of that.
Okay, I think we're all back on the same page. Peter?
Yeah, Peter Koch. Almost. As a delegee in that case, I would like to be no longer be able to collect statistics broken down by even the further delegations. So making that an action item and collecting statistics broken down by the next level should be a non-issue once enum really gets used.
What do you mean?
By sheer volume. If we would have to collect statistics, I mean, we can collect statistics on the 9.4.E164.ARPA servers in the sum, but breaking them down then again by area code or whatever is a fair amount of work.
That is not what I have in mind.
Okay,
it's
so.
Really on a per country basis, on a per E164 country basis.
Yeah, but you only see the occasional queries that go to the E164.ARPA queries, and the amount of queries that goes there instead of the tier 2 in that language, tier 1 actually, that depends on the TTLs of NS records and so on and so forth, and things we really don't know collectively. So you may get numbers, but the worth of that numbers is questionable.
That's true.
Apart from that, we want to keep it growing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some numbers that will certainly be interesting are the ones from the not yet delegated country codes.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but in that case, you have to break down again.
Yeah. Are there other questions? Somebody mentioned something over the last couple of months about the way the document archive was indexed and whether that was back the way it had been before because that was more convenient. You're looking perplexed, Axel.
Indeed.
Do you remember what that was, Carsten?
Well, it used to be that on the enum pages of the RIPNCC, a full set of documentation per request was available, including, say, all emails, all faxes, and what have you, being exchanged between, say, the ITU or the respective ministry or whatever, like mm-hmm. a full documentation. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I only find information that basically a certain country code is delegated. And for example, for email exchange, I'm referred to the respective enum-announce mailing list. And that's basically mm-hmm. it. And the funny part, however, is that with deep links, the information still is available, it's just not linked. And I just do not really understand why that is. So I thought, like, is there a reason for that?
It
or
was not a policy decision.
Pure accident?
No.
Huh?
Accident.
Okay.
Not a policy decision, certainly.
Okay.
But it seems to me to be the kind of thing that falls out when you do housekeeping. And sometimes you clean up a little more tightly than you wanted to.
No, again, the request is to let us know, and then we'll work on that.
So, Carsten, that's really an action item on you to let them know what it is you're missing.
Yeah. Two more things. I wonder whether E164.ARPA itself is already DNSMOND. Is that like?
It is, yes.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. Last time when I
it's on the DNSMOND side.
Okay. And what was the other item? Oh yeah, the quarterly IAB reports. The RIPNCC used to send reports to the Internet Architecture Bureau,
yes.
Internet Architecture Board, and those guys published those kind of like statistics, whatever it was, the small report on the website. Is that like something that has been stopped?
That's an action on me to coordinate with the people
Is it still useful? What should we change? Or okay, just
cool.
Continue.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Excellent. It looks like you're off the hook, Axel.
Good.
Thanks very much.
Welcome.
I'll let you down that way. And next, we have Jim. Etsy plug test.
I guess you can read that fine as it is. I can't figure out how to drive Windows, put this into full screen display. As you know, there was a plug test that ETSI, the European Telecommunications Standards Institute, organised in March, sorry, the end of May, beginning of June this year. Plug test is the ETSI speak for an interoperability event of some description, and a whole bunch of different plug tests to do with GSM standards and SS7 switches and all sorts of other weird things like that. However, the first one to do with ENAM was held, and myself and Lawrence Conroy were the joint coordinators or managers for the plug test. So I just wanted to give you an update of what happened and what the outcomes of that were and what the prognosis is for the future. We had 16 participants from 15 different countries, and it wasn't just from Europe, which is what we had set out when this thing started. So there were representatives from North America and from the Middle East, although it was predominantly from Europe, as you would expect. And the evaluations that were filled in afterwards by the participants rated the event very highly. They thought it was very worthwhile. They thought the organisation was good, and the people from the ETSI Secretariat were very helpful in helping them with all the various things that had to be done. And of course, we had a nice time in the south of France because it's a nice place to be at that time of the year. What was also very satisfactory from my own personal point of view was that ETSI themselves considered this to be a satisfactory event. Some of the plug test events get of the order of a couple of hundred people turning up for them. But the ENAM one is the first one, got, I said, 16 participants, and that for a first event at ETSI is quite high. Some of the other ones have had 6 or 8, so they were quite happy with that. And the European Commission, which provided some of the funding for the plug test, also seemed to be fairly happy with the report that was published. So there we are. I hope this picture's come out very well. This was us at lunchtime, working very hard, as you can see. So it was a very enjoyable time. As one of the things we did during this plug test, as well as play around with all the usual things with ENAM aware hardware and bits of software, we had one or two tutorial elements. So Lawrence took care of discussing some of the fine points of NAPTER record things, especially the evils of non-terminal NAPTERs, and explaining what the implications of their use would be if someone was crazy enough to try and use them extensively. And I gave a sort of overview of secure DNS, because I think at some point in the future ENAM is likely to make use of that technology. And I think, again, it was just a point of laying a placeholder down. This is stuff you need to start thinking about if you're going to do serious ENAM deployment at some point in the future. Another outcome that came at the end of this was whether sort of post-mortem on the event to figure out, you know, what do we achieve from this thing? And there was some confusion over terminology. And one of the major confusions was over the use of the term ENAM resolver. And here we saw an example of this disconnect between the telephone world and the internet world. So some of the bellheads that were there thought the ENAM resolver was the thing that did the processing of the NAPTER records, whereas for the DNS people, the resolver was the thing that did the DNS lookups. So we suggested that this would have to be clarified, and we put an action on a liaison person to take this back to TISPAN, which is the ETSI equivalent of a working group, to have them try and clarify the terminology so that it's clear what everybody knows about when they use the term ENAM resolver. So in essence, what I think this will probably be is a combination of the two things. It's the thing that does the DNS lookup and then processes the NAPTER records to figure out which URIs to use and how to do the regular expression and substitution matching if that's required as well. The other major thing that came out of this, and I'll talk a little about this later in my second presentation today, is about the need for a permanent testbed of some sort. So the obvious infrastructure you need for that would be a bunch of name servers, a SIP box or two, perhaps a PBX, and also a bunch of E164 numbers that could be used. And the idea for that would be is you could do an ENAM lookup on a given telephone number, get back some kind of irregular or broken NAPTA records, and see how your applications and software solutions behave in conformance with those tests. And the sort of ideas that we had in mind for this would be is that if your application fetched the NAPTA records and processed them, say, for example, in the wrong order, you would call a SIP URI, which would give you a voicemail message saying, you idiot, you failed this test because you didn't process the NAPTA orders according to correct preference values. So this is the idea that we have in mind for this. So DNS Moda is willing to provide some of the infrastructure support in terms of the SIP servers and other infrastructure for this, but we still haven't resolved this issue about the numbers to use for that. Another thing that was talked about very briefly is the need for some best common practices in things like DNS operations, and this is obviously the clear no-brainers, things like switching off requests on your servers, trying to have redundancy in terms of hardware platforms, software platforms, and so on and so forth, and obviously things like support for the DNS zero. And this was, of course, before we wrote the draft, but that's another story. We also were thinking about there might be an idea to consider producing best common practices for applications behavior and how they should actually respond to things like broken or strange NAPTA record responses from the DNS and failure modes. So we should try and capture what should be the right thing for an application to do, or give some, if you like, style guidelines for an applications people. Where this work will be done is still unclear. So the plug test homepage, there's the URL for it. And the plug test report is available, and there's also some other stuff there about the quotes, press release, overviews, and some of the comments of the participants. So if you want to know anything about it, that we can get some of the information, or you could ask myself. Any questions? No?
So that's all either totally over our heads or so clear that it needs no questions. Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
And next up is Peter Koch.
Sorry, for what? Oh, just. Oh, okay. It's not even delegation, so can we have a reload? Exactly.
So, yeah, my name is Peter Koch. I work for DNIC, and I have been doing the RIPE DNS host count for DE for quite some while. And since I, well, have no other life, I try to do this in another part of the domain tree. So what's this about? The background, why doing this? How doing this? What was the outcome so far? And all these numbers are preliminary, and don't believe any statistics, and don't believe mine anyway. And then a look what we could do in the future and what might be useful to do for other prefixes or TLDs or whatever the right term is here. Okay, so this is a presentation I gave during the during DNIC ENAM Day a couple of weeks ago, and it's more or less a literal translation into my version of English. So the RIPE host count has been or was started in the early 90s by Martin Terpstra, I guess, and other folk. And so what it really does or did is counting the number of hosts in the RIPE region by and large, more or less not the real number of hosts today because of firewalls, zone transfer restrictions, and so on and so forth. But what the host count still can figure out is more or less the growth of the internet measured in terms of number of adjacent devices. So the growth is simply the more important figure. It works by recursively digging into, and digging more or less literally, digging into the CCDLDs within the RIPE region and, doing some mathematics, statistics, collecting, zone transferring everything, counting A records, eliminating duplicates, and so on and so forth. And the end result is a number giving so and so many million hosts within a certain CCTLD. then at the RIPE NCC, some of those collections are done at the RIPE NCC, some of those collections are done within the CCTLD by the particular registry or by any other volunteer. Finally, at the RIPE NCC, data is combined, collected, and the result is made public. So when doing this, and when we have a new playground like Enum, statistics and growth might be interesting, especially in our early stages. So this was the reason to apply similar thinking to E164.APA. But then, well, the host count, as I said, doesn't really count the real number of hosts anymore. Firewalls are a bad thing. Split namespaces are a bad thing for that. And as well are zone transfer restrictions. During performing the host count, it turned out that over the years that more and more zone administrators were a bit paranoid or, say, sensitive, giving away their zone data. And although many of those explicitly supported the host count, some of those would keep AXFR closed anyway. So since the host count needed a full zone transfer, AXFR might not be available. So for the Enum thing, it would be helpful to have an alternative technology or technique method to count up front. What is easy is doing an exhaustive search. The E164 namespace is pretty much structured. So one could just write down all potential phone numbers, convert them into E164.APA domains, and then look whether or not NAPTA records exist at those domains. Exhaustive search in that case is probably a bit time and resource consuming because there are millions and millions, quadrillions, whatever, of potential numbers, so we need something more efficient. And talking about efficiency, I'd like to draw your attention to a similar namespace, similar to E164.APA, which is the reverse delegation space for IPv6. And this gives me the prize for mentioning IPv6 in the Enum working group. So what has IPv6 to do with Enum? Nothing. Their namespaces are comparable, however. The IPv6 reverse namespace is similarly structured. Instead of having only labels 0 to 9, it's the hex digits 0 to 9 and A to F. So in the IPv6 world, someone claimed, well, it's nice to have 64 bits of address space per network because that supports security by obscurity, since regular port scans or address range scans will no longer be possible. And all we have to do is to secure our systems, just hide them in the address space. So we don't start giving out numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but randomizing them. Okay. That would give an opportunity or a probability of n compared to the 64th power of 2 finding a particular system in the address space. Quite a nice security feature, you may think. Well, the problem is you can't hide, at least not if you use IPv6 reverse mapping, since IPv6.APA is well-structured. And a couple of months ago, I did some work with together with Roy Ahrens, doing a proof of concept implementation, detecting systems in IP6.APA based on their presence in the reverse tree, and showed that, well, you can't hide. Same technique can be applied to E164.APA. So now I'm going to bore you with some DNS technical details. You know that pretty DNS tree? And the nodes in the tree, that is the inner nodes and the leaf nodes, they own record sets. Usually at the leaves, you have the A records, the quad A records, which is the second mentioning of V6 in the Enum working group. You have MX records, and last not least, you have NAPTA records there. The inner nodes usually have name server records, SOA records, and maybe also MX records. But there's a special case. Some of those inner nodes do exist, but they don't own any data. These are called empty non-terminals, or ENTs in short. Second to have in mind is not every domain is delegated. You may have domains of different depth within your zone. You don't have to delegate every subdomain. You can have subdomains within one zone. Example is on the slides. The plus 49 prefix for Germany is delegated out of the E164.APA zone. So obviously there is a domain 4.e164.apa which exists, but there's no delegation and no data for it. So 4.e164.apa is an empty non-terminal and can be detected as such. So this gives the way to go for a more efficient approach to counting counting nodes in the E164.ARPA tree without having the need to do an exhaustive search. We started at the prefix code for +49, and then what I did was check all the potential child nodes for existence, and that can be done by just querying for any record for that particular domain name, and either you get NX domain back, which says that doesn't exist. For example, 0.9.4 obviously doesn't exist because 0 is the code for the distinction between local and long distance calls. So there will be no official phone number starting with 0 there. This part of the tree doesn't exist, and I don't have to follow that part of the tree. So checking all potential candidates helps me prune the tree. Potential candidates are only the digits. I have 10 candidates. And then existing candidates, I just recursively climb into that tree. If I find the one, that is 1.9.4 E164.ARPA, I again look for all the potential children and can figure out which children do exist, which don't. And that again helps me prune the tree quite efficiently. So what I can do is a depth-first search or a breadth-first search in the tree as I like, depending on my implementation, whether I do it with a queue or a stack anyway. So this is how the measurement was done, and it ran, I guess, half a day or maybe 16 hours or so. When climbing trees, be careful. Climbing trees can be painful. You can hurt yourself when falling down or when being stuck in the between the leaves anywhere. Wildcards. Enum and wildcards, that's a contentious topic. Wildcards help camouflage the empty non-terminals. That is, if you have wildcards anywhere in the tree, that empty non-terminal detection mechanism won't really work. But again, you can't hide. At the latest, when you start doing DNSSEC, the wildcards will pop up again and identify themselves as wildcards. But still, there are some in the tree which had to be dealt with. There were a couple of lame delegations which, had to be circumnavigated not to confuse the collection script, and there are bugs. Bind, for example, in its earlier versions, incorrectly handled the empty non-terminals and hands out the wrong return code and signals an error instead of giving the correct data. But that those versions of Bind are not widely deployed anymore, fortunately. So, numbers. When doing these measurements, I pruned the tree at the 13th level, that is the 13th digit, to save some time and not to exhaust too many resources. Since that script that I wrote, it's a quick hack Perl script, I won't show to anyone in that stage. It's a resource hog. So, need to be a bit careful about that. Below the +49 prefix, there are 3,600 delegations, as you can could see on Carsten's slides, and that sums up to approximately 26,000 NAPTA records below these delegations. And that, of course, the difference in numbers is due to the fact that there are multiple subscribers or companies with many more phone numbers than single persons. So these 26,000 NAPTA records were owned by approximately half, that is 13,000 owner names, 13,000 phone numbers that were actually mapped to the enum tree. And that means that certain phone numbers represent or own more than one NAPTA record, and the largest number I saw was 13, actually. And that gave a pretty large packet in the response. Was far larger than 800 bytes, so there's a pressing need for eDNS0, obviously, and this is all without DNSSEC even. Only 50 wildcards were discovered just as data points. There were some surf failure responses, that is configuration failures or expired zones or what the like. Only approximately 100 of them, so no big deal. And yes, to convince you that that method actually brought some gain, I was able to climb through zones that that had AXFR restrictions. If all were open for AXFR, that whole method would have been useless in the first place. So yes, it brought some progress. So what could I see within the tree then? The NAPTA records were the only records I had really a closer look at. Various services were announced through these NAPTA records. 20 enum services, you have them listed by decreasing order of existence, of presence. The usual ones, tell SIP, HTTP, even mail to, message mail to, whatever, and so on and so forth. And surprisingly, there were lots of legacy enum service NAPTA records announced. Actually, they were the majority in so the lower services there at the second bullet point, they were the majority of offered NAPTA records, which again is mostly SIP and TEL services. So this is all I have. As I said, it's preliminary. What could be done in the future? Well, the my current implementation, as I said, is really bad. It's a resource hog. It issues far too many queries when climbing up and down the tree, and that can be optimized. And when doing that, there's better caching necessary. Someone asked during the enum day at DNIC, oh, why didn't you count your neighbor's prefixes and so on and so forth? And I responded that we want to keep good relations with our neighbors, and the current implementation obviously is not well suited for that. Okay. So, yeah, there are some more optimization opportunities. Regular surveys, as with ripe host count, for example, might be able to actually find out that there's anything growing out there, that is more enum domains or even more NAPTA records per number or whatever. I guess further post-processing of the collected NAPTA data may be interesting. Applying more syntax checks to those and closer looking at the distribution between the various offered services. Especially the the new versus old, that is RFC 3761 versus 2916 NAPTA or enum version, that should probably be followed, and maybe something could be done about that. When people out there still offer old, outdated NAPTA records, that might not serve their needs very well. Syntax checks on NAPTA records or on the URIs could be done. I had a very course look at the NAPTA records and found, okay, they were mostly syntactically correct. That is, no one offered non-terminal NAPTAs, and there were no, the last field where the domain name fits in was not, never used, so that's okay. And what might be done is surveying what I call NAPTA culture. Enum experiences draft by Lawrence Conroy, I guess, for example, suggests certain values for preference and weight and so on and so forth. And one could have a look at what is deployed in the field and probably mix that and retrofit that in the experiences documentation. And on the other side, someone might want to come up with some countermeasures because they don't like anyone counting or digging into their enum zones. Although I could have had access to the 9.4 E164.APA zone, I did as I would not have this access. So this was all done as anyone could have done without any privileged access to, say, the Tier 1 zone or anything else. So, yeah, that's mainly it. Any questions, remarks, comments, flames? Anyone thinks this is useful?
Don't all speak at once.
Carsten is walking to the microphone.
Yeah. Jim Reed, I think this kind of thing, Peter, is useful to gather statistics. I'm a little bit worried, though, about publishing this information just now because, as we all know, the uptake of enum registrations is very, very low. And I think if that information is made available, people who have got an incentive to try and discourage or slow down the deployment of enum will use those statistics for that purpose. I mean, they may just do that anyway, but I think by being open and saying that out of perhaps, what, 100 million numbers in Germany. There's only 20,000 active in the enum tree. Is maybe not such a good thing to be doing right now. Same thing would certainly apply in the UK from that point of view. I think it would also discourage other people from trying to develop or come forward with enum-aware applications and services because they don't perceive there's any value in the public enum tree because it's empty.
Okay.
I have a short question on this bind back on the slide.
Can you tell us which Karsten you are?
Yes, Karsten Strodman-Mellenmeier, sorry. On this bind back on the slide, there was every bind older than 9.3.
No, bind 9. Bind 9 up to 9 to the latest. So bind 8 doesn't have that bug. Bind 9 does, and it is fixed in bind 9.3.
Okay, but still bind 9.2, bind 9.1 is widely used because you said these older versions are not used anymore.
Right? Probably not in the in the enum trial.
Okay.
Sure, otherwise they are. They shouldn't, but they are. Yeah, thank you.
Michael Haveler, .at and +43. I think that's extremely useful. I have a suggestion to make regarding how you collate the information. We have experience, especially in those countries with open number plans, you once in a while have a delegation, a single number delegation with a ton of DDI extensions behind it. So to get a rough grasp of what the number of accounts is in the field, that can diverge quite wildly from the amount of reachable numbers you see. So it would be very valuable if you could provide maybe a heuristic of merging it with information from the registry, the distinction between numbers, or pilot numbers in particular, PBXs, and actually reachable endpoints, because that will give you an idea of the actual number of services sold or active in the field. Just the number information might not be very useful. In the case of AT43, we have 7 digits of DDI extension, which gives 8 million possible accounts for a single pilot number. So what gives? So, but other than that, I suggest it is very useful and you continue with it. Thanks for the work.
Thank you. Regarding the numbers, yes, you're right. Obviously, there were some companies having 3-digit extensions and so on and so forth, and having provisioned for all of those potential 1,000 numbers. And they probably don't have 1,000 reachable phone numbers. But to keep the not to make the numbers even lower, I just kept that. Okay, this is to in part to respond to Jim. Registrars at the enum day were quite positive about those numbers being higher than the already published 3,600 delegations. So, I understand your point, though. Michael?
Can I take on another suggestion, although it might be regarded as spam or a DOS attack a bit? With SIP, you can send an options request, which gives you the client capabilities back if the client is working, but it will not provide a call setup, which gives you an indication that there's an active endpoint behind it. That would also be very interesting information.
Yeah, sounds interesting, at least for those cases where a SIP URI is provided. I'll contact you afterwards.
Okay. Carsten Schiefner again. When you mentioned the wildcards, is that like real DNS wildcards, or is that like also regular expression on the right-hand side of the resource record, as in like eating regular expressions in the respective NACTA record?
No, in that case, I'm simply DNS minded. DNS wildcard on the left hand side, that is the owner side.
Yeah.
Of the domain.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Peter, before you leave, I've just one last question for you, and that is whether you'll consider it an action item to continue with this very interesting work, and to come back at the next RIPE meeting and report if there's something interesting to report, or report on what you've done in the meantime in this area.
No, the first one. Reporting whether there's something interesting to report, yes. It is on my action list anyway, not expanding this beyond +49. I have had offers from colleagues from other countries who were interested already.
So we might have something available next RIPE meeting, which is, I guess, half a year in the future.
That would be very nice. Thank you in anticipation, and thank you again for now.
Thanks, Neil.
And before I ask Jim to take the microphone again for the his next topic, is there any corner of the room where this list hasn't reached yet? No, everybody signed the attendance sheet. Great. You're on again, Jim. It must be that other topic.
Okay. As you may recall, from about half an hour ago, I discussed the idea of a semi-permanent ENAM testbed for people to test their ENAM-aware applications and services. And the one missing component of that particular jigsaw is some number ranges to use for this purpose, so that there are entries in the public DNS underneath, somewhere under E164.ARPA, to make this whole thing hang together. Oops, yeah. So, what can we do about this? As I already said, the idea is you do a lookup of some valid E164 number, you get back an apt or RR set of some sort that can then be used by your application or tested by your application to say things like, you failed this particular test because you didn't process the apt orders in the correct order, or there was some kind of weird regular expression matching things which did evil things which may have confused the resolver code and the application itself. So this was the idea that we want to try and do something with. And then obviously document that for a given telephone number, you can expect this kind of behavior and test your application to see if it passes the test or fails in some way. So as I see it at the moment, there are really probably four solutions, one of which I think we can rule out automatically, which is that perhaps a friendly telephone company would give us, let's say, 1,000 or 5,000 contiguous numbers out of one of the allocations they got from the local regulator. However, of course, telcos don't like to do that kind of thing, and it sets all sorts of nasty precedents, and I don't think some telcos would be too keen on that particular approach. So I ruled that one out and didn't even put it on the slides. So we essentially left with three potential possibilities for this. One is to use already existing numbers which are set aside for a specific non-telephony use. One would be to get a special block from a regulator somewhere. And one would be to try and get a country code, the equivalent of a country code, out of the ITU. And I'll run through the three possibilities, the advantages and disadvantages. And what would help me as I try to take this thing forward is try to get a view from the working group about which one of these options they think is the best to pursue. Perhaps we could have this written up as a document so that if I have to go back to a regulator or deal with somebody who deals with ITU, I can say, look at this right document. This indicates there's a need for this thing. It's not just me that's asking for it. There's a wider requirement for this. So the first possibility we came across, and this is which was actually used during the ETSI unplug test, is what we're known in the UK as drama numbers. The telecom regulator has set aside a bunch of numbers in different area codes and mobile telephone number codes, which are set aside for use in dramas, television programs, films, radio, that kind of thing. So these are numbers which will never terminate on the PSTN. But if someone wants to pick it up and dial that number because they want to talk to Sean Connery or tell him about the plot development that's going to happen in the next scene, these numbers are not going to get anywhere. So this is what these numbers are specifically set aside for. And when it came to the ENAM plug test, for a variety of reasons, we couldn't get numbers out of the French ENAM trial because the trial had essentially stopped. So we were stuck there. We couldn't get the delegation for the ETSI PBX. So I needed a bunch of numbers to use for the test numbers, so I just stole temporarily some of the UK drama numbers. It's working on the basis it's best to ask for forgiveness than seek permission. But having done that, I was then told to give them back and don't do anything like that again. You've been a very naughty boy. So the advantage of this approach is it's fairly simple and straightforward. There are a number of ranges like this in other countries as well. I think the US uses the dialing prefix 555 for this very purpose. So these numbers are known about and they do exist. The problem with this is that these numbers may or may not be routable over the PSTN depending on what your telco does And if you're using this in a national context, it may be an international routing problem. Essentially, it's the telco's equivalent of peering and who exchanges, how you exchange routing information and how the SS7 signaling works, all this kind of stuff. So a number might be routable if I'm dialing the number, let's say, from the UK. But if I'm in Ireland, I can't dial this UK number because it's one of these things that's blocked because it's used for drama purposes, and the Irish telco hasn't done a deal with the British telco to route these particular numbers. Where I think we have another problem, though, is that we're perhaps overloading the functionality of the number range. I think, in a sense, because these numbers are set aside for a specific purpose, drama use, they should be left aside for that particular purpose. Because, again, if we do use these for some kind of ENUM test, and let's say there's some kind of SIP to PSTN gateway that terminates the calls for these numbers, perhaps then bad things will happen if, let's say, a million people decide to call Sean Connery at the same time because they've just seen something that's happened in the latest film that's been broadcast in the BBC. So I'm not sure that's a good approach. One of the things I've tried to do recently is the second one, is I've gone to the UK regulator and say, please, can I have a block of numbers? Maybe 1,000, 5,000 would be better. 10,000 would be even better still. Not that I plan to use 10,000 tests, but I'd like to have the capacity to add more tests and not come back for more numbers later. As a sort of side effect to that, I also asked them and said, could I get a block of perhaps 5,000 or 10,000 numbers out of some part of the UK dialing plan which is very sparsely populated? For example, the Highlands of Scotland. There's a grossly over-provisioned in terms of numbers as there are compared to people. I think even if we gave all the sheep mobile telephones and landlines, we'd still only be using something like 1% of the available number space there. So, the regulator said, I need to think about this. And I think the real concern that the regulator has here is it sets a precedent, because what this could mean is setting aside a block of numbers, E164 numbers, which are not for telephony use, but has some kind of test functionality. And I think the concern the regulator has is that if they were to do this, it could open up floodgates for anybody else that wants telephone numbers for other non-telephony purposes. Again, a problem with this approach, again, is that these numbers might or might not be routable over the PSTN. I discussed this at the UK ENUM Group's last meeting, and one of the representatives from one of the members there suggested, well, if we run into problems with Ofcom, why don't we go and talk to the people in Geneva? Maybe they could give us one of the equivalent of an international test code. And this already has been done for other purposes. For example, Newstar had one which was used for that purpose. And a test code was assigned to one of the offshoots of Telecom Austria for some kind of ENUM stroke voice over IP trial type approach. So perhaps the ITU could be persuaded to set aside some kind of resource for that. It's been done before, so there's no reason in principle why it shouldn't be done again. The only thing, again, is we need to get somebody who was a member of the ITU and was prepared to cooperate with the process to make the request, and who knows how long it would take to get through study group two in Geneva before a conclusion was reached. Again, we also have the disadvantage there is of PSTN reachability, because then in that case we'll set a new country code equivalent. And again, to get this globally routable, it requires all the telcos to configure their SS7 switches to recognise this particular country code and route the calls to the right destination for some definition of the right destination. That probably isn't going to happen ever. So again, we may not be able to get the connectivity from the PSTN that we'd like for people trying to call from the PSTN into the internet rather than just going from the internet back to PSTN with this approach. And of course, then we'll get into issues about who actually owns that number code and also then the related test bed. So my question here is, for the working group, the couple of questions is, do you think reserving a block of numbers for some kind of permanent test bed is a good idea, yes or no? Is that a no or a yes? Yes? Yes. Okay. If the answer is yes, which is the preferred document and how do we try and progress that?
To the list. Yeah. What?
Open it for discussion.
Peter?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, thank you. Peter Koch. What you're asking for is the ENUM equivalent of RFC 2606, more or less.
Yeah.
So it might be useful to learn of the lessons out of 2606. And one of the lessons, one of my lessons there is that a block is probably not sufficient. You want multiple. and, okay. and that that is to be considered in that case. Apart from that, I perfectly agree that it's generally a good idea to have the 2606 equivalent in enum, however that might look like.
Okay. Just a suggestion for the multiple block approach could be is if we were say to go down the path of national regulators setting aside blocks, perhaps we could have a situation where we get a chunk of numbers from the UK, a chunk of numbers from Germany, a chunk of numbers out of the US or whatever. Maybe that might satisfy that requirement. Mike?
I think that I think having a block of numbers is a good idea, and I think one of the things you have to ask yourself is what the test bed is for. If the test bed is there as a mechanism for a single country to come in and actually do trials, then if it's a single country, they should actually get blocks out of their national regulatory authority. If that test bed is there to support international interconnectivity, then I think the ITU approach is the better approach. And since the president's already there, finding someone to go and do that work, I think, is the better way to do it.
Right.
Patrick Flats, San Francisco. I also ask myself what you're going to use these numbers for, because I've had this discussion in Sweden with like test E164 numbers, and the response I got from the regulator and telcos is that the telco world in Sweden has managed without any test code block numbers for telephony. So like, why do we need it when we do deal with telephone numbers this way?
Well, as I say, the reason for that is primarily for testing of enum applications and solutions so that they can look up numbers and get test codes or test cases they might not otherwise get from their own implementations. So the idea is to give them sets of NAPTA records that do strange and interesting things and perhaps exercise their code in ways that we'd otherwise not get.
Okay, the testing I do under the path.fc domain or
right.
equivalent, so what, and I don't need any test numbers for that.
Well,
I can use whatever number I want.
Sure, but I'm saying just do this under the public enum tree, publish information
in
about
that case, in that case, you request numbers from someone where you can get numbers.
Yeah.
And you get numbers because if you start something which looks very much like a proper deployment, which is in the 164.ARPA tree, I'm extremely nervous that people will start use them. And how do you then migrate from that into real numbers?
No, they're not to be used for any kind of service, Patrick. It's just, as I say, purely for the testing of applications.
Yes, but define testing.
Okay.
I have in the ITF, I have internet, I have really bad experience. It's not the internet like a big test. It's like, where do the test end?
Good point, yeah.
So I'm a little bit devil's advocate here because yes or no depends very much on what you are going to test.
Right. Daniel?
To further expand on what Patrick has said, what I missed here was a set of requirements. You know, what you really need these things for. So before moving any further of this, I would ask you to actually have a very clearly defined set of requirements for these things. My gut feeling would be that you could do the same valid tests. You have two easier way out than this way. One would be not to do it on the E164.ARPA. And the only reason why that wouldn't work is that implementations might not be flexible enough to choose another string there. And if that's the case, again, exactly what Patrick said, just get some numbers from somewhere from someone who already has them.
Right.
You don't need so many. I'm quite sure I could point you to a couple of enum providers or SIP providers that would be very happy to contribute like a block of 100 to a good cause, and you get a couple of those, and you're probably done. It's much easier than go through all these hoops. So unless you can come up with a set of specifications that says that's not sufficient, I think we're wasting our time a little.
Yeah, well, you're right to say that the issue about requirements needs to be firmed up. That's quite clear, Daniel. This was something that came out more of a sort of wish list rather than something that said there's a specific requirement. What came out of the ETSI plug test was, yes, it would be good to have a test bed, we could do this kind of testing.
You have to go from nice to have to require to.
Of course, yes, yes, indeed. Carsten.
Yeah, Carsten Schiefner again. I would really opt for the option to have like plain normal, in particular landline numbers without any kind of ITU special code or whatever have you clutch, because
landline numbers immediately, but I'm almost 100% sure that landline numbers, plain normal landline numbers, would immediately ensure reachability for any kind of like gateway systems or whatever. So you just connect that very number to the gateway system and you can, well, check it out and test it out whether it works or not. And you just do not have to be concerned whether the number itself is reachable from a PSTN. You have to be concerned whether like your gateway works the way you'd like to have it working, but PSTN reachability is more or less built in from the very beginning.
Okay. Yep. Daniel?
I'll publicly offer one Dutch E164 number.
Okay, thank you.
I think that about wraps that up. Jim, will you take an action item to refine the promote a requirements discussion on the mailing list?
Yes.
Great. Now, we've used up all our slack and then some. The next item on the agenda is follow-up from the plenary sessions, if people want to do that. Nobody's rushing. We covered in the plenary session, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all the people who made presentations in the ENUM track of the plenary. That's to say, Michael Haberler, Bernie Herneisen, and help me, Carsten, Marco Sanz, yes? And Adrian Georgescu, great. It's really good when people give such good presentations. Now, are there things from those? I'm not sensing anything's coming from those, so we can move on to the next item on the agenda, which according to my hint sheet, which doesn't want to respond to me just at the moment, is input and output with other working groups, and I'd like to ask Karsten or Peter Koch to make a, it's you, Karsten. He got his finger pointing first.
No slides really prepared. This is an input-output item from the DNS working group. Peter and I together figured that there is there's a potential for a glitch in the ENUM delegation process, at least in the initial delegation process, that it's obviously the other way around. In the reverse mapping tree, or some when it comes to reverse delegation, some pre-delegation checks are being performed, and our assumption was that this should be the very same case for any delegation on E164.upper. However, given the some results of what's in the zone as well as what's in the database, Peter and I figured that most likely this is not brackets yet the case. And the yet part proved to be true. Indeed, RapidCC is about to work on applying the same pre-delegation checks that are valid for EN.upper to E164.upper as well. Also, we talked a little bit about ongoing delegation checks. That's still like a little bit of a wobbly item. Peter Koch there might be concerns, or at least let me put it this way, additional things to look at. And so this basically is from our side considered to be a non-issue again, and I took up the work item to come up with some policy blurb that E164.upper should be treated the same way than the reverse mapping tree. That's basically it as in output. And see Peter putting his laptop as now? Okay. Yeah. I see Leo Vigoda.
Leo Vigoda, RIPE NCC. Can I just clarify slightly? A few months ago, we updated the way that reverse delegation for address space works. And when you send a domain object for IP reverse DNS to the database, it does a whole bunch of DNS checks. And if you're suitably healthy based on those checks, which I think have been published, then we'll delegate the domain. Those checks aren't implemented for E164.ARPA in the database update mechanism, mm-hmm. but they are performed manually with the, we use the web checker, mm-hmm. And also go and have a manual dig around and just sort of look at the health of the DNS before delegating. There is one little problem with this, which is that you're checking the DNS and you also look at the domain template manually. If there is a slight difference between what you ought to see and reality, then it's possible for the human eye to miss it. And in the case that we're referring to, what happened was there were two letters that were transposed mm-hmm. by accident, and the DNS was correct in the DNS, and what was intended to be there was correct. It's just there was a slight typo, and that's being sorted out with the delegee, as the ITU phrased the word. But we do these checks manually, so it's just a case of going and adding that functionality onto the E164.ARPA updates in the same way it's there for inadra.arpa and IP6.arpa. We can also perhaps do other stuff if people want us to do, because it's a much smaller domain. It's never going to have hundreds of thousands of delegations directly below E164.arpa.
Could I ask you then, Leo, are you planning to automate this a bit anyway to make your life easier and to make the whole operation more efficient? Or do you need this working group to produce a document for you? Or do we need to produce something that would go into the NCC services working group to eventually? I mean, how much support in terms of waiving the right kind of documents do you need us to bring to you? Or is that a non-issue?
I don't think we probably need to go through a formal policy development mm-hmm. process for this. We probably need to let people know that we intend to put this on
okay,
the...
Okay, if not a policy development process, do you need some kind of requirements document jointly between us and DNS working group? Or would that be over the top too? I was just trying to see... Do you need any input from us by way of help or direction, or are you happy to do stuff?
I'm not sure right now. I think we probably want
well, let's
to
let
have
it
a
lie
chat.
There, shall we?
Yeah, we want to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
That's probably what
so
I
we
would
keep
leave
it informal for now.
Yeah.
Peter Koch?
No, okay, it's an action item on Carsten in the DNS working group already to write up a proposal and taking your input into account, I would say we keep that on a lower profile mm-hmm. than the PDP then.
Yeah.
And consult with you and see how to proceed best without generating a bloat procedural overhead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't need an action item in this working group because it's in the other one.
It's on Carsten anyway.
Carsten anyway.
It's on me, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a very last question on that one. Would the audience think that it's a good thing to do, we had that in the DNS working group as well already, to perform not only initial checks on the sanity of the delegation, but also ongoing checks to enable in particular the NCC to give a heads up to the respective delegee in case there's anything like odd with the zone and the delegation in terms of considering the E164.ARPA zone as the basically the enum route and any kind of direct delegation from that zone to a child zone as sort of important for any kind of say fixed mobile convergence or PSTN internet voice over IP convergence and stuff. Is that an issue? There's a general pro feeling here in the group, or people just do not care, or is that like a bad idea? Yeah.
I have to say, I think
Jim Reed.
Yeah, Jim Reed. I think I have to say my answer to your question is it depends, and to some extent, this also parallels the discussion we just had in the VS working group before mm-hmm. before lunch. Is that on the one hand, there's probably a requirement on the NCC, either implicit or explicit, to protect the stability and robustness of the DNS infrastructure. And I think we should always strongly support that and be very, very careful of making sure that that integrity and stability is preserved. That's important. However, I'm not sure it's the NCC's place to be providing monitoring services to everybody else when there are other companies that may be in a position to offer that service, or countries could do that themselves if they chose to do it. Mm-hmm. Because I think you then get into issues of national sovereignty, and you may find countries resenting the fact that these upstarts in the NCC are telling them they've got lame delegations. So I think you have to be careful how this is done.
Fair point.
Quickly, if you can, Daniel.
I agree with Jim, obviously. But the thing is, I didn't follow the beginning of the discussion, but I think definitely it's the within the responsibility of a parent to find out whether it has lame delegations one level down.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of stability. And if in case that was the discussion, and there's no doubt in my mind that that's part of stability. So if just to pick a kind of country, Germany, they would run their name service for 9.4.E164 not correctly. I think it's the duty of the NCC to tell them, because the NCC is responsible for running the parent zone.
Mm-hmm.
Anything below that, no. But anything there, yes. It's part of stability, not part of commercial monitoring.
So immediate side of the zone cut.
Yeah. And anything else, how they run the servers, I don't care. But if it's lame, very definitely, I think that should be monitored by the parent.
Okay. I think you said that already. Yeah.
Okay.
I know I have at least one item of any other business, and we're already into coffee time.
On that particular issue, I'd like to refer to discussions that take place between a very particular parent, namely the parent, and the children. And so this is a careful to be viewed issue. Dot, period, parent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. I think we've dealt with that one. And now I think we're at the any other business stage, and I think Michael Haberler wants to say something about specially designated blocks versus normal phone numbers or some such, as quickly as he can.
I'll keep it short. I have nothing prepared. What I will do is just convey a little bit of experience so you don't fall into the same trap we've fallen into, and we're there and we don't like it. This is the situation. You know that numbering is quite a battleground between voice of IP providers and other participants of telco space, like mobile or fixed network operators. In particular, the use of geographic numbers, the reason for that being that they typically have the lowest termination rates and thus are popular and they're in the customer's mindset. Some countries, including Austria, have established new number ranges for purposes of voice of IP, and in our case also an enum driven or a number range which is defined by enum, which essentially means if there's an enum domain, that number is valid, otherwise it's not. But the argument I'm making is really regardless whether it's for enum use or not. And the point being, new number ranges essentially give regulators an evasion mechanism out of the discussion about geographic numbers and essentially a playground for the voice of IP crowd. Now, the downside is the methods and the time span it takes until that new number range is actually reachable globally is incredibly long. You may not take your IP analogy and say, okay, we'll add a prefix to our RS, update databases, reset BGP session, and done. It takes years, literally years, to introduce new top-level country codes, like was the experience in Liechtenstein when they introduced a new country code at the height of the dot-com boom, and they had a call center with a Swiss country code for 3 years in parallel to debug reachability problems of their new country code. a new number range below a country code exhibits the same properties. And the problem is, it is not your unwilling national telcos. That problem we had fixed by suggesting to our regulator that there is a requirement in the numbering regulation that all national number ranges have to be routed, whether they like it or not. That wasn't there before. It is there now. It does not solve the problem. The problem is actually upstream internationally, and it has to do with the different settlement rates which basically European mobile operators are allowed to get away with relative to fixed network operators. If you're a telco and terminate a call, for instance, in Germany to call Carsten, that's something, maybe a cent a minute or so, to deliver to the fixed line. If you call his mobile, as an operator, you pay at least 10 times as much. So that has led to the practice from starting from what was completely open between telcos, everything plus 4.9, dump it on Telekom Germany or Deutsche Telekom, to actively filtering number blocks at the ingress to make sure that only cheaply reachable number blocks are actually handed over. And that filter is the problem. It is in the originating telco's network where the filter is, and that's where the new number ranges get stuck. You could say, well, the information will percolate. It's practically impossible to debug, and you wouldn't believe on how the routing works. I've actually inquired on how they do it. Anybody from Telekom Austria here? Okay, then I can say that. If there is a new number range, my question was, how does a new number range actually get activated in a network? There is a person watching an ITU website for a table where new number ranges pop up and they're eventually entered. So that's the mechanism. They've actually told all the upstream operators and also the major mobile telcos in Austria to actually route these number ranges. Some have actively done so, but it's a mess of a process. We've actually set up a website, and if you see some spam on the occasional mailing list in the next couple of days, that's designed to help to reduce and narrow down that problem. And I would be very grateful if you could dedicate a phone call per telephone type which you have, landline, mobile, voice of IP, whatever you have, to try the test number which will show up there, and leave a note on a wiki site which is referenced in that mail to add your experience, whether it worked, it didn't work. And we need that information to put thumb through on the carriers. So, but my advice for if you engage in the regulatory discussion at home and that the theme of a new number range for voice over IP comes up, beat them brainless. Don't do it. It is a dead end. It will work by the time when you don't need it anymore. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. And I see people shouldering rucksacks and stuff, but there are one or two things that we need to do before closing the meeting. The most important is to thank the scribe from the NCC and the Jabber person. Did we get any Jabber traffic? No, it's been quiet. Thank you in any case, and thanks to the scribe. And to rehearse the action items, and I'll check these with the scribe afterwards, but my notes say that we have action item on the NCC to extend the statistics to all of the E164.ARPA servers. On Carsten Schiefner to let the NCC know the details of the missing links. On the NCC again to look at the quarterly IAB reports and do, I'm not too sure what, but do something useful. Find out if they're still needed. You have that? Over there? Yeah, good. And on Peter Koch to continue the host count analog and report at the next meeting. On Jim Reed to stimulate discussion on the testbed numbers and/or number ranges. And I think after what Michael has said on everybody to cooperate in the Austrian reachability tests to the extent that we're able and prepared to do so. I hope I haven't missed anything.